We just start. We are in the middle of the third parak of Mishlei. And last year ended talking about holding on to the tree of life as being a metaphor for Chachma. They continued to bring life. And now Shlomo returns to God's Chachma. See what that means. It starts out Hashem b'chachma yasad aretz. God established the universe with chachma, with wisdom. Konin shamayim b'tuna, set the heavens with understanding. Da'ato t'mot nivka'u, split the depths, braid the depths with his knowledge, with his da'at. Ushchakim yarfu tal, and now and the heavens will drip with dew. And that's a description of Hashem just creating the universe. The concept of Sefer Mishlei, we talk about the human chachma, bina, da'at, those three things, but the use of our minds to decide what's right. Decide the right and good behavior. It's all about ethics. Here we're using the same terms. It's chachma, it's tumna, bina, it's dat. It's used to describe God, but it's not the same thing at all, right? God doesn't have the same kind of chachma that human does. For many of Hashem's attributes, we talk about halakha b'drachah, that we want to imitate God. God is kind, so we are going to be kind. God closes those who don't have, so we should do that. We can imitate Hashem's knowledge. Our intellect is by definition limited. Something very different. And this is the Rambam talking about what it means that God knows. And this is Hilchot Teshuva, which obviously is relevant to this time of year. And the idea that Hashem knows everything. Hashem is omniscient. And how that affects our free will. Shema Tomar, and maybe you're going to say, but Allah HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yodea Kol Ma Sheya, God knows everything that was. And knows everything that will be before it happens. God knows that someone's going to be righteous or rasha or not, or lo yada, or whether he knows or not. If God knows what someone's going to do, so he'd say tzaddik, that a person will be righteous. That's going to happen. It's impossible for it not to happen. And you say, no, it's possible that God can say, no, that someone's going to be righteous. And it doesn't happen. Then obviously God didn't know that from beforehand. The person has the free will to act in their own way. That's the famous question of God knows, kol yadua by reshut nitunah. Everything's known, but still you have permission. You have free will. Da. And you should know, shuvat sheila zu, that trying to answer that it's impossible. It's wider than the earth is wide and is and broader than the sea. Ramim and many great principles and high mountains tulimba hang on this. So not gonna get an answer to what God's knowledge means. You have to know. We'll love you and to understand. But you have to understand what I'm gonna tell you. Were explained. Shekadosh Baruch Hu eno yodea mida shiyuchut mimenu. There's no such thing as God knowing something, as in God exists and then there's a knowledge separate from that. That's where existence is the knowledge. Kivnei Adam, shehem abdatam shenayim. That human being and the knowledge is something external to what you are. Elohu yitaleh shemo echad, but God's existence is that knowledge. Awareness is what makes the universe what it is. And human beings can't really understand this. Just like you can't understand the true nature of God, as it says, that a living human being cannot see me, Hashem tells Moshe. So too, we can understand Hashem's da'at, Hashem's knowledge. That's what Yeshaya says, that my thoughts are not like yours. So Mishlei is going to use this term, Chachma Bina Da, talking about Hashem, but it's a metaphor. Trying to understand what God does in knowledge is kind of we understand what we do when we know something. But the emet for Hashem is very different from emet. Truth for a God is something very different from truth for human beings. They're related. You can try to understand, get a little picture of it. There's the Maharal, talking about the nature of imitating God. and how we can do that with chesed. We can't do that in terms of emet, of truth, of knowledge. You need to realize this also. Afal pi she'adam oseh mishpat emet b'yashar. A person can do justice, can have truth, righteousness. In a mishpat who midat adam. Human beings cannot really be right. They cannot have absolute judgment. So you never know the whole truth. It's impossible for you to not make some mistake. To do something that's not emet. You don't know everything. Therefore, humans do not have true mishpat, in the sense of judgment, of reaching the right conclusion. It's impossible. Therefore, we can't say that we are imitating God. We try to act justly, do the right thing. We're not. We can't possibly know enough about what's going on to be, have the absolute truth.
Also, we don't know enough. Even if we like learn something, we don't necessarily know it forever because we continue learning, and so you remember some things and then you forget some things.
That's true too. Right? Your brain is finite, and to have absolute mishpat, you need to know everything. How whatever you're about to do fits into the grand scheme of how the world works, and there's no way to do it. Anyway, whatever you thought you knew, you're going to forget anyway in a couple of minutes anyway. So that's the way. That simply is the truth. Okay. Right. So, but rakashehu ba chesed was a chesed shlo mishpat. But doing chesed. Doing kindness to someone without trying to figure out is this just? But that is possible. And a person can do this. You can do chesed. You can't have emet. Sorry, chesed. And this is the explanation of the pasuk in Tehillim that we looked at about kindness and truth. Chesed emet nifgashu, literally met. But the Midrash says they met in battle. They fought each other. Chesed and met are mutually incompatible. Chesed, bifrat to midat adam. But doing chesed is something that human beings can do. Shayach adam, and that's something relevant to you, that your chesed is real. Lo yimata mishpat. Rak midat. This is the only real thing that you can do and say you are imitating God in your chesed. Ladam. So this idea of chesed. Of doing good to other people. That's unique to people. Yomar b'zeh, that uniquely is something that you can say, Sholeich achar kodesh baruch. That's halach b'rachal. That's the following God. Amidah mityaches el Hashem yitbarach asmo gam ken. This is because this character of being, having chesed is part of God's midot as well. So that's what I'm saying. Just like God feeds the hungry, you can feed the hungry. That's imitat yodei. And the story of this, Chesed Be'emet Nifgashu, and I quote this Midrash all the time, is that when God's creating the world, the various angels, the various midot argue about whether human beings should be created at all. And Chesed Omer Yivareh, Chesed says God, human beings should be created, Shugomel Chasim, because it's possible for human beings to do Chesed. Be'emet Omer, truth says, Al Yivareh, don't create that. You can't. Shekulo shikarim, because it's always going to be a lie. Everything he does is a lie because it doesn't have this complete truth. So how do we look at chachma? So what does Hashem's chachma do? How do we think about it? And Mishle says talking about creation of the world, right? Hashem, Hashem b'chachma, chachma. The point of connection is through the Torah. We quoted the Zohar on this. Rish Rabbah says the same thing. God looked at the Torah, created the world. Barnash, human beings, mistakel baba. Look, human beings, look at this. Look into the Torah, baraita umakayim alma, and they perpetuate the world. We get to be partners with God when we keep the Torah. And so our imitatio Dei. Give me a second here, sorry. in Chachma, where we try to imitate God, it's not to pretend to have God-like Chachma, but that we use our Chachma to create the universe just like God did. The universe that we create is the social world. We talked about Robert Carver looking at the normative world, the world of which we interact with other people, the social world in which we live, right? So we are Mekayim Alma. We allow the world to continue to exist. So the Midrash that talked about Chesed and Emet arguing about whether to create human beings, it continues. Masa HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what did God do when the Malachim are all arguing? Not till Emet v'shlicho la'aretz. God took Emet and threw it down to the ground. When Emet said, don't create man, God throws him away, which is what the pasuk says, like a tiv, tashlich Emet aretz, he threw truth to the ground. And then God answers, well, what's going to happen with Emet? The answer is Tala Emet Menaretz, that truth should rise from the ground, not the throwing it away by putting it in the ground, but bringing it down to earth. That's what the pasuk says. Emet Eretz Tzitzmach. Right after this, Chesed Emet Nifgashu, that truth will come from the ground. That's given Emet Eretz Natan Livnei Adam. That we have the opportunity to decide truth. We can make decisions. God's given us that gift. Okay, so Emet here means something very different from divine Emet. There's different definition of what Chachma means. Hashem gives us the gift to determine that, determine our own truth, determine what is the right thing for us to do now. So Shlomo was telling us to keep that in mind, right? God created the world with Chachma. You too have to use your Chachma to create the world, in the sense of the world that you live in. So he says, continuing on in Perek Gimel, B'ni alozu me'necha, do not let this idea leave your eyes, slip from your eyes. Yetzirah tushia umizima, guard plans and translate mizima as heuristics. Use translated the word tushia before as Torah. It's also translated as wisdom, but here tushia is a Torah she nikra tushia, milashon yesh, with that which is. In the sense that God uses the Torah to create the world. But this world that we live in is one in which the Torah is what we're supposed to keep. You chayim, so if you keep this in mind, there will be life for your soul, and grace on your throat. Then you can walk straight with surety. So you can walk securely. Your legs will never never stumble. When you lie down, you'll not be afraid. You'll lie down, your sleep will be sweet. You have no reason to fear sudden terror, and with the destruction, Shoah, the evil ones when it comes, if you keep this in mind. Okay? Keep the creation in mind that you have nothing to be afraid of. Keep God's creation. Now, it could be that this is just the fact that when I contemplate the vastness of creation, look into the stars, it inspires awe, inspires yira, which Hashem thinks is a good thing, and that's what this way the Rambam puts it, about I look at creation and I get yirat Hashem. That's a good start. This is the Rambam in Hilchos Torah. Hayachi derech la'avato v'yirato. How do I get to the point of loving, fearing God? When I stop to think about God's creation and God's great and wondrous works, that we'll see God's wisdom is infinite, it's endless. A person will immediately be so overwhelmed that our loves are praising God, and you'll have a great desire to get close to God. Much of it. About David, as David says, "Sama nafshi, my heart, my soul thirsts for God." That's Abba. I want to be close to God. As I continue to think about these things, you'll get to the point where you'll just be drawn backwards, be afraid, and become terribly afraid in the face of God's infinity. You'll realize that you're this tiny little creature, afela, in the darkness, omitted, b'dakala, with absolutely no knowledge, with ne tamim da, with before the one who is perfect. David, ki that when I see the works of your hands, then I ask, what is man that you are mindful of it? So contemplating creation brings us to Yira, which brings us to Abba, which brings us to Yira, just knowing how small we are. And thinking about this in terms of these things, I will explain many great things about God, about theology to you, petach, and you'll help understand God. That's what Hilchot Yosei Torah about. Moshe Amar Chachamim b'inyan Ava, that's what the Chachamim said about loving God, mitoch kach atamakir misha amar b'ya'olam, that it's through this that you will recognize the one who created the world. So, Shem b'chachmayis ha'aretz, God creates the world, and we would say on that, b'ni yalos me'einecha, do not let this pass from your eyes, because you will need this in order to come to Yirat Hashem, and we know that Yirat Hashem is Reshit Dad. But I think here someone means something different. It says, Netzer Tushya Umizima. Keep in mind the Torah that's through which the world was created, and Mizima, which is that which we translate as a heuristic, as a technique when I don't understand everything, how can I figure out what to do? That's what a mizima is, a rule of thumb. And the answer is I have to look at creation of the world with chachma bina and da'at. I say, okay, I need to do the things that preserve the world that Hashem created. That's my rule of thumb. What's the right thing to do? Something that preserves the world. Kayim. So we have it ends with the idea that mishat rishayim tavo, that the Rishon will eventually be destroyed. And he ends this section with the reassurance, ki Hashem yeh b'kisilecha, that God will be with your foolishness, even when you're a kisil. Shamar la'alcha milkod, and he will guide your legs from stumbling, that we're not perfect. We don't know everything. We're all kesilim at some level of being foolish. We still know that Nersham will be destroyed. We say in Tehillim about that Yishbar lo doesn't understand b'froch rishim that as the wicked flourish like grass, b'yitzitzu kol aven, and sinners blossom, yishamdam, they'll be destroyed in the end. But if you're going to act in good faith, Shlomo reassures us, you'll do okay. Shemar ra'alcha milkod. Because you're not going to have everything right. You're only human. And the kesil in Mishlei is a particular kind of fool. It refers to self-assurance. The point that you think, I don't need some to think anymore. I know the answers. That's a kesil. And I'm not looking to think to decide anything else. I know that. And we're all like that. We all think we have all the answers. At some point, we decide we've got enough information, we're going to act. So we're going to keep Hashem's omniscience in mind. And then remember that we have primitive monkey brains. We don't know everything. And that's going to keep us from stumbling. And the next part of Mishlei is telling us what the heuristic is. What's the rule of thumb that you're going to use for dealing with other people? And that is Mishlei's Musar message number five. We had four last time. Fifth one is called Tit for Tat, Mida Keneged Mida. And someone says, Al Timna Tovi Ba'alav. Do not refuse good to someone who deserves it. If you have the strength to do it. Don't tell your friend who's asked for something, go and come back tomorrow. I'll give it then. If you have something now. Someone asked for something, you say, no, I don't. Come back tomorrow. Give it. If you have the opportunity to give, do it now. Don't plan evil for your re'ah, for your friend, for your colleague, for your fellow human being. If that person trusts you, sitting securely with you. Don't fight with someone for no reason. That person's never done you any wrong. So it doesn't say, don't fight with the other people, because there are points where you need to. That's a rep, you know, just never fighting is a recipe for inviting abuse. Don't do it necessarily, means that being nice has to be your default. Be
Being
good.
nice to what?
It has to be the default. Be good to other people. Cooperate. Always be good, unless they've shown you that they don't warrant it. And that's why Hashem acts as well. That David describes it in Chasid Tit Chasad, with those who are kind. You are kind, in Gibor Gevra Tamim Titamam, with those who are straightforward, you should be straightforward, im Navart Dabar. But with the fool, you need to show up their foolishness, im Mikesh to Palal, and with those who are warped and twisted, you have to be equally warped and twisted. You have to respond to what others are as well. And that is not just a moral decision. But you can show that that's the best strategy for the long-term survival of society. We're going to talk about that. Because life is not a zero-sum game. I'm going to do some game theory. It's a little bit math. Ideally, we can both win, whatever our interaction is, or we can both lose. Unfortunately, with just about any interaction, it can be the point where I help you take advantage of me without helping in return. That I end up losing even more. So I'm trying to decide how I'm going to interact with you. If I'm good to you, well, if you're gonna take advantage of me, I'll lose everything. If you're gonna be good to me, if you're gonna be good to me as well, then we'll both win, but I don't want to take that risk. So it's almost logical for me to say, no, I'm not gonna be good to you. I don't want people to take advantage of me. I want to get as much as I can out of this. And so we both end up losing. This is called the prisoner's dilemma.
Why do you both end up losing?
Because, well, we'll talk about that. The model of this is from 1951, why it's called the prisoner's dilemma.
Okay.
It's as a logical way of kind of putting together, how do I understand, what do I do if I'm, and what does a zero-sum game mean? And the reason why we both lose is because it's logical for both of us to not cooperate. Because I am deciding, well, I'm going to get as much as I can, and you decide I get as much as I can. So neither of us cooperate, so both of us lose. That's
Oh.
it. But if we could, but that's the way it works, is I can't read your mind. I have no idea what you're doing. So the model here, it's a little hard to hard to see, but two criminals are captured by the police. So we're trying to avoid jail time rather than positive reward, but the same idea. Police suspect that they are responsible for murder, but do not have enough evidence to prove it in court. But they are able to convict them of a lesser charge, carrying concealed weapons, for example. The prisoners are put in separate cells with no way to communicate with one another, and each is offered to confess. If neither prisoner confesses, which is the cooperate part in this model, both will be convicted of lesser offense and sentenced to a year in prison each. Okay. If both confess to murder, both be sentenced to 5 years. However, if one prisoner confesses while the other does not, then the prisoner who confessed will be granted immunity, while the prisoner who did not confess will go to jail for 20 years. So if they could plan together, they would both not confess and end 1 year in prison. Right? I say you don't say it, but we don't know. So I'm trying to decide what I'm going to do. Let's see. If you confessed, and then I don't confess, then I'm gone for 20 years. That's bad. If you didn't confess, and I confess, then I get no jail time at all. On the
I
other
don't
hand,
know if somebody did something and they confessed and the other person confesses. Why does that mean that neither one is, gets a punishment?
if both confess, then both would get 5 years.
Okay, both
Okay.
confess, both get
That's
5 years.
the idea. So this is that's the basically working, you're trying to confessing here means I'm trying to convict the other one.
Oh, okay.
I am turning state's evidence on my colleague. I don't like the example because I think that, obviously they're doing bad things. So we want to turn this sort of turn around in terms of getting some kind of benefit. If I work together, I get plus, both of us get plus 20. If I take everything, I get the whole 40, you get nothing. But there's no right answer because no matter what, no matter what you've already decided, what my decision here will always be better for me if I confess rather than don't confess, if I don't do what's best for both of us. Okay, if they could communicate the best
I'm
strategy.
just saying it doesn't matter, even if the person should do the right thing, but they don't, that shouldn't take away from what you do.
Well, the problem is that if they do it, no matter what they do, I will be better off if I do the wrong thing.
You would be better off if you did the wrong thing.
Right. Remember, if I don't confess and the other guy does, I gotta go to jail 20 years. If I do confess and he does, that goes down to 5 years. Right? So I
Yeah.
surely should confess. I reduce my punishment. Even though the best thing for both of us would be to not confess. That's kind of the nature of what this quote, the prisoner dilemma is. Right? That the logic leads to confess, which is called defecting, doing something that hurts the other one. So we end up doing the worst things for ourselves. And there's no good strategy in this game. You can analyze as much as you want this kind of zero-sum game, put any numbers you want in there. But the other downside to betraying someone else is that we're going to keep interacting. This is not a one-time thing. So what I do now influences what everyone else does to me later. That's called the extended prisoner dilemma, that we keep interacting. And I keep deciding, am I going to cooperate or defect, which is the way it's put in the computer terms. And for that, there is a willing strategy. And the answer there is yes, we should cooperate. Because there, I'll know by the next time that you're going to cooperate, I'm going to cooperate, we'll both end up being a bit better off. Unless the other side are betrayed beforehand, then I said to betray them back. So this was from the 1980s, 1980, Robert Axelrod, a professor of political science at University of Michigan, held a tournament of various strategies for the prisoner's dilemma. Invited a number of well-known game theorists to submit strategies to be run by the computers. And the tournament programs played games each other and themselves repeatedly. And these strategies specified whether to cooperate or defect based on the previous moves of both the strategy and its opponent. Okay, so you try different strategies, this extended one, keep interacting. And the winner of the Axelrod tournament was the tit for tat strategy, which is cooperate, always cooperate in their first move, and then do whatever the opponent did on the previous move. Start with cooperation unless the other person betrays. That wins. And Axelrod wrote a book called The Evolution of Cooperation, sort of talking about this in game theoretical terms. We assume that in a world ruled by natural selection, selfishness pays. So why cooperate? In The Evolution of Cooperation, political scientist Robert Axelrod seeks to answer this dilemma, and that he organized the famed Computer Prisoner's Dilemma Tournament, which sought to find the optimal strategy for survival in a particular game. Over and over, the simplest strategy, cooperative program called tit for tat, shut out the competition. In other words, cooperation, not unfettered competition, turns out to be our best chance for survival. And that is, I think, what Shlomo was saying. He says, "Al tariv im adam chinam im lo gemalcha ra'ah." That's the simplest way to deal with other people. That in the world that God created, in terms of, the rules of the laws of mathematics, but I can do this as a computer simulation, right? Al tarech al tacharesh reachara. Cooperate with the other person. That's gonna end up being better, and it's not just a law, it's a good idea.
So basically, it's saying that altruism is basically a good thing.
In terms of long-term survival of society, yes, altruism is a good thing. You will be better. You will be better off being altruistic.
So would you say that basically that's like Derech Eretz is altruism?
Well, that's what we're saying. That's your mizima. He's using the term mizima, heuristic. Derech Eretz is, I need a rules for determining how to act. I've got lots of them, but the general principle behind it is going to have to be altruism. I am here to. I need to allow for your success because that allows for my success. So Shlomo ends this parak with a reassurance that that's okay, right? That nice guys don't finish last. Right? The evil exists and the people are going to take advantage of you. It still will work out okay. Al tekaneh be'ish chamas. Do not be jealous with the person of violence. Va'al tibchar b'chol d'rachav, and don't choose any of their ways, right? Walk in the ways of God, not in the Ish Hamas. Ki tovat Hashem neluz, because the something that's disgusting, that's abominable in the eyes of God, will be lost. That Yesharim sodo, and God's counsel will be with the righteous. Marat Hashem bevet reshah, God's curses are in the house of the evil. Bevet tzadik yivarech, but the home of the tzadik will be blessed. Im lelitzim who yalitz, because God will mock those who are mockers or who are scoffers. Again, it's that tit for tat. But those who are modest, who are God, will get grace. The wise will inherit honor. Ksilim, and the fools, merim kalon, will get lots of embarrassment and shame. So the reward for Chachamim is kavod, honor. It's a little odd because you usually think of kavod as a bad thing, right? That's the Mishnah Avot, Rabbi Elazar Kafar Omer, Akina v'tava v'kavod, jealousy, desire, and honor. Motzina et adam min ha'olam, remove a person from the world, right? That they just those are things that destroy the world. So why is it a good thing that the tzaddik gets kavod? And we have a yitzhar hara for kavod. That's what this taking motzim adam min olam means, right? We want honor. We want other people to respect us. We want people to be impressed by us. And the Maharal explains what this is all about, and why is it that kina, tav, and kavod destroy a person's world. And he says on this Mishnah that each of these as relate to an aspect of ourselves, of who we are. And this can get a little philosophical. And we got some Greek in there too, but that's good. Da, you should know. Dalacha. Ki adam hu bal chai. Human beings are living creatures. Yesh lo nefesh, and we have nefesh, which we're going to call spirit, life force, that which makes us alive. Nefesh lo kochot muchug, and there are different aspects to that. Whatever it is, very fuzzy, but the idea that we are alive and there are parts of that. The Rambam describes it in his introduction to Pirkei Avot, Shem Rosh HaRofim, and that the greatest of doctors, that would be Galen, talks about the three parts of the soul, about what it means to be alive. This is Galen, the Greek physician, talking in the beginning of the book, Shem Shalosh. There are three kinds of in Greek, pneuma. Aspect of life, there's tiv'it, chiyunit, and nafshit. And this tripart soul comes up in everyone's analysis. The idea that there is usually termed in medieval commentaries as ruach hatzomeach, the life of a plant. That's simply life. There's something different between plants and rocks. they're alive. Whatever that ineffable, undescribable thing is that we reproduce and react and we use resources, that's soma. Then there's another level, which is chai, life, movement, what animals have. We react to the environment, react in real time. Okay, that's what he quotes here. And the first one, Tzomeach, is tivi, just nature being alive, chiyonit, nonsense of being alive, but of moving, tenua. And then the next level is intelligence, medaber, we can speak. So we have Ruach Tzomeach, Ruach Chai, and Ruach Dibur. Or a Kabbalist will put it as Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama. You've heard those terms. They mean exactly the same thing. Being alive, being reactive to others, and thinking. Plato called it in Greek epithymetikon, thymoides, and logistikon, which means literally appetite, emotion, and reasoning. These three aspects of who we are. And each of those causes us to act in a way that keeps us alive. Elu, and then understanding these three parts of the spirit, kochativi, that the tzomer, the aspect of being alive, hazana, that's taking in resources. We use them to continue to grow and live. Because ze ba tava, that's what tava is. The yetzer hara for tava is I want to keep my koach tivi alive. I want things. I want food. I want a mate. I want to have children. That's tava. That's the yetzer hara for the nefesh. Koach hasheni koach hachiyoni. Second aspect is this movement, the interaction with others. Shemeno chayot. That's we can interact. That's how we move from one place to another. That's what jealousy is. We become jealous. We move from one place to another. That's what jealousy is. My interaction with other is I want what you have, or more actually, I want what you want. That's kina. And kavod is the yetzer hara that comes from the intellect. Because honor is something that's spiritual. You know, devar gashmi, it's not physical. That applies to our intellect as knowing where I fit with other human beings. And all these different aspects that we call yetzer hara come from different aspects of ourselves. Kavod is yetzer hara that comes from intelligence, our ability to call, communicate, relate with others. That's the deeper. It's translated often as honor. That's not really the way it's used. We don't really talk about honor a lot nowadays. Now it's more about how we fit into society, what we now would call status. Koch desire is the desire for status. Because we're social primates. What matters to us is where we fall in the hierarchy of our hominid troop. Okay, I don't know where I fit. For chimpanzees, it's who gets to groom who. Here it's who they're saying Lashon Hara about in the background. And this is, this is from this is from Jane Goodall, who studied chimpanzees. But we're just chimpanzees. Much of a chimpanzee's life, especially male chimpanzees, is dedicated to climbing up or being knocked down the chimpanzee social ladder. Those on the top need to fight to stay at the top, and those on the bottom need to find a way to improve their lot if they want a chance at fathering offspring and access to the best resources. That's what kavod is. I want to know where I fit in the social ladder. And this is a quote from Will Storer, who wrote a book called The Status Game. He's a sociologist. We play for status, if only subtly. This is about human beings now, not chimpanzees. But we play with every social interaction, every contribution we make to work, love, or to family life, with every internet post. We play with how we dress and how we speak and what we believe. Life is not a journey toward a perfect destination. It's a game that never ends. And it's the very worst of us. All we're interested in status. And he continues, did a test where they had baboons in a laboratory. And these lucky or unlucky baboons were given a really unhealthy diet of junk food to live on for a while. They developed unhealthy bodies and high levels of atherosclerotic plaque. The researchers found that the baboons were all equally unhealthy, whether the baboons toward the bottom of the hierarchy that were more likely to fall ill as a result of their bad diets. Being low status is bad for your health. And then crucially, the researchers conspired to rearrange the hierarchy of the baboon troop. And they found that the health outcomes changed in lockstep with the rearrangement of the hierarchy. The new tap baboons were showing healthier and better outcomes than the baboons beneath them. So status sinks down to our physical health and our happiness. Now, we're assuming that's true of human beings too, because we're all just social primates. We care about kappa. Where do we fit? Letter. One of the major studies I quote in the book looked at 60,000 people across 123 countries, and fa they found that people's well-being consistently depended on the degree to which they felt respected by other people. That's status. And it was the strongest predictor of long-term positive or negative feelings. Status is more important to people's happiness than family or money. And they found this across gender, culture, age, and personality. Wherever they looked all around the world, they found this was true. So that's what we're interested in, right? We're all interested in kappa. And he continues on as well. That men are violent compared to women, okay? Men to get status by hurting other people, other men. Very much tied to humiliation and try to avoid humiliation, humiliation of the family. But women have got their dominance techniques, ostracization, bullying, group attacks on other people, the kind we see in social media. All of that is also all just jockeying for status. It's all a way of achieving status through dominance. So kappa is a bad thing, right? We destroy each other looking for our status, for the Mishnah said. So here in Sefer Mishlei, it's about kavod nachachamim yenchalu, that the wise will achieve kavod, will achieve status. So is that a good thing? They'll inherit it. They're going to be high status. And the reason why is because Yetzer Hara, in that sense, should be considered evil per se. It's not bad. It's the urges for a person to meet their own needs as opposed to those of others. But imani li mi li, we know that. So it's important to have a yetzer hara for your own preservation. I have to pay attention to my own survival, my own flourishing. And so the Medrash famously says that creating the yetzer hara, that's what God meant when Hashem said, look at the world and said, hinei tov ma'od. It was very good. Creation itself was good. It says, "Vinei tov ma'od." As a whole, it was very good. Ze yetzer hara. That's creation of the yetzer hara. And Midrash asks, "If yetzer hara tov ma'od atimaha, that's really weird. Why would you call something that's called ra, right? Yetzer hara, the evil inclination? That's very good." Now the truth is, Ella she'lula yetzer hara. That if it were not for the Yetzer Hara, lo bana ba'adam bayit, a person would never build a house, lo nasa isha, a man would never marry a woman, lo holid, would never give birth, lo nasa v'natan, would never engage in commerce, would never make money, would never do anything that's necessary for society. You need your Yetzer Hara. That's what allows us to survive. And we have a famous example of that in the Gemara that talks about the end of prophecy. You know, this Gemara in Yuma, when the Anshei Knesset Gedola and Nehemiah described as coming back, rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash, and then Vayetzaku El Hashem Elokim B'kol Gadol, they cried out to God in a great voice. Ma'amar, what were they crying about? Amar Rav, Yitema Rav Yohanan, Baya Baya, Oyvei, they cried out. As they rebuilt the Beit, after the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, they rebuilt it, and they're looking at it now. We've come past the point where the Beit HaMikdash has been destroyed. And the Heichal, the God's hall, has been wiped out. All these righteous have been killed. And we've been exiled from our land. And still, the Avodah Zarah for the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. This desire for Avodah Zarah is still Raked Benan. Is still dancing among us. They can rebuild it, and they think we still have this desire for Avodah Zarah. This Beit HaMikdash is going to be destroyed again. Klum yahavna lan ela kablei be'agra. You gave it to us for getting a reward. Lo iya be'inan v'lo igra be'inan. We don't want it, which the context is the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah specifically. desire, human beings desire to serve idols. We don't want it, we don't want the reward. Nafalahun pitka merikia. A note fell from heaven, the Havei Katabba Emet, and had the word Emet, God's seal, on it. Rav Chanina, Shmamina Chotamosha Kash Baruch Hu Emet, that's how we know that God's seal, the sign of God is Emet, is truth. God said, I agree with you. Ativa Batanita Tlati Yamin, so he sat and fasted for 3 days, Tlatalayota, and 3 nights. Masruhu Ninihalu, and they were given the control. In this Agarata, given control for the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah specifically. Nafagata kigiora denura beit kodesh kadashim, and they saw it as though it was a lion jumping out of the Holy of Holies, out of the Kodesh Kodeshim. This Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah was coming out of the Kodesh Kodeshim. Amarhu Nevi Yisrael, and the Navi at the time, who was Zechariah, the last Navi, told them, "Haina Yitzra Devada Zara. This is Yitzhar for Devada Zara, as Zachariah describes it. Yomra Zot Harisha, he said, this is the evil. Eshlecho Tel Toch HaEfah, Eshlech Eben Oferet Al Elpiha, and they threw it into a basket and put a lead cover on it. They eliminated the Yitzhar for Devada Zara. Right now, you have no desire to worship idols." I'm assuming that's true, So they davened for the ability to wipe out this Yetzirah, and it worked. Amru, so they said, "Holy of Eid Ratzonu." So since this is obviously a time when God listening to our prayers, Eid Ratzon, Nebai Rachmi Yetzirah Davera. We're gonna eliminate the Yetzirah for Tava as well, for lust. Bo Rachmi Yadayhu. They prayed, and it was given to their hands. Amru. And the Navi, the Chaya tells them, Chazu, look, Ikatle, if you destroy this Yitzhahara for Ta'aba, for lust, if you destroy it, Kali Alma, the world's going to end. Chashvu Tlatayomi, they held it back for 3 days. Bo Biyuta, Bat Yoma, Yuma, Bechol Eretz Yisrael, and they looked for an egg in all of Israel, and they couldn't find one. The chickens stopped laying eggs. Again, without this Yetzirah for Tava, no one's going to reproduce, no one's going to mate. So this model that you still needs that Yetzirah for just for the existence of the world. But what's this with this Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah? And what does that have to do with the existence of the world? Why do they have to say, well, we don't want the reward for it. We're going to take the chance on this. And the Ra famously connects that to the Seder Olam, which is the Mishnaic summary of the history of the world. When it says, until that point of the Anshei Kesa Gedola, Ad Kan Hayu HaNevi'im. Nevuah, prophecy lasted until that moment. Perush, and the Gra explains, Yetzer Hara, when they eliminated the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, but la Nevuah ended. I came Lashon HaGra. So Yetzer Avodah Zarah can move over B'yom. And this is what the Gemara in Yoma is saying. That eliminating the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, this desire to see the divine in everything, eliminated the possibility of being close to God. Those are the same things. Nobody wants to be a Navi because nobody feels spirituality. We don't have that sense. The Meshech Chacham continues, that he's talking about is the Perek in Zechariah. And it says, Mahu, and that day, Num Hashem, Tzvakov, God says, Achrit et Shmot Ha'atzabim min ha'aretz, I will wipe out the idols from the land, will use true Odin, they will not be remembered. The Gamet Nevi'im, and it will take out Nebuah and the spirit of impurity. Both of those will be gone from the land. This is what the Gemara means. It's going to lose Nevi'im as well. And this needs a lot of explanation. I can't go into this right now. That's what That's what this, the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah, is something that we don't have anymore, and therefore we don't have any sense of. Every Yetzer Hara has.
What?
That we don't have a Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. We don't want to worship idols.
Oh, okay.
We don't see God in everything. We're not pantheists. That may be a good thing, but it also means we don't see God in everything. We can't get to the point of Nibbu anymore. That was a loss, right? That was a full destruction of our world. And so this is the way Rav Dessler puts it, Mechzav Yahu, the they felt it was necessary to work as hard as possible spiritually. But tell me, Yetzer Hara, wipe out this desire for Yetzer Hara. So that was the reason why the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. And because of that, they were willing to give up al schar gadol. Okay, they're willing to give up the potential benefit of this Yetzer Hara and of suppressing it, of directing it correctly. As long as the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, that Nivua Nisim happened. We lost that. It's the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah that makes Nevuah possible. Then Sheikh Hasagadola decided, right? Lo igra ba'inan, lo iyu ba'inan. We don't want it. We don't want the reward. That's it. We lost an important part of our world. Same way, the Yetzer Hara for Tava that makes reproduction possible. And just like we need a Yetzer Hara for Tava, we need a Yetzer Hara for Kavod. We need to want to fit into human society. We need to be pushing for status. It's what makes us want to interact with others. If you don't have this Yetzer Hara, then you're a sociopath. You don't care about other people or how I fit in with other people.
So then, how can the world keep going?
It's a constant balance, right? We need to use our Yetzer Hara to serve Hashem.
Okay.
Okay? That yes, Kina Tava Kavod, take a person out of the world. But also, what keeps us. This is what Yisid Yasha Monk, who's a columnist for the Atlantic, says. Humans are social creatures. We crave money and power. We pursue physical safety and physical pleasures. Okay, that's the Kina and Tava side. We have deals for which some of us have an occasion proven willing to die. Among the most fundamental drives we have, one that in many circumstances trumps all the others, is the need for social connection and social approval. That's what drives us. The reasons for this go deep. For much of our history of the species, individuals who are cast out of the group were far more likely to die. That's still true. Even today, many people find social humiliation as hard to bear as physical pain. Solitary confinement is, for good reason, considered a form of torture. In the history of warfare, many more people have been willing to die by marching lockstep with their comrades than to save themselves by deserting from the group. We are social creatures. But that's the funny thing. You need it, but you can't work for it. You can't actually tell people, well, I want higher status. The way the Gemara kind of, if you go, Gemara is usually worded, is anyone who chases after status, a kavod, status runs away from you. Well, if you run away from status, kavod, then status comes toward you. You can't chase it. What do? And this is Will Storr, this is a
Yeah,
sociologist.
and that's really wise. Where does that come from?
What?
Number 30.
That, okay, so the Gemara is where it's called Machzor al Gedulah. But the way it's always quoted is this way here. You look at any kind of talking about, you can find this quote lots of places, quote. It's usually understood, quoted this, the Gemara is usually understood this way. Chasing after status means you won't have status. We know that, right? You get a little bit labeled as a social climber, no one respects you. It says, how do you get that? That this is one of the most fundamental silver linings of status games. This is a story talking about the status game here. That there's a good side of it, is that human animals evolved an automatic system of reward for people who are valuable. So you get status by being valuable. So when we're virtuous, when we're selfless, when we do something good, people automatically go, oh, that's really good. You did a great thing. And they give us a bit of status, even internal. When we give money to charity, do something that's good, we feel better about ourselves. We reward ourselves with status internally. No other animal has a system of rewards for virtuous behavior. So this yetzer hara for kavod is an important part of what allows the social universe to survive. Okay? That just like if it wasn't for the yetzer hara for tava, no one would get married, blah, and would never give birth. The yetzer hara for kina, for jealousy, no one would build a house, no one would do business, do commerce. We'd never have, well, the things, the very fact that we have air conditioning, indoor plumbing is huge. That's all kina. So too, the yetzer hara for kavod through allows the structure of an organized society to flourish. If we don't, then we're in Hobbes' famous state about life in the state of nature is nasty, brutish, and short. We need that structure of society. The key to realize that you can't achieve status by dominating others, you have to be the sort of person that others grant status to. And that's what Shlomo was saying about being good, cooperating, not doing bad to others, and then kavod chachamim, and then the wise will literally inherit that status. Not that they achieve it, but it will come on to them. And we'll stop here. That's the end of Perek Gimel. So remember, tit for tat, cooperate, unless some of the others betrayed you first. And status is important, but you can't achieve it without being a good person.
I think that's the main message.